In business, things move quickly. You have to be ready to shift, pivot, adapt, then do it all over again. Comcast Business gives you fast, reliable internet on the nation's largest gig speed network. And now, ask how to get fast shipping with Amazon Business Prime Essentials. Whoa, that was fast. So no matter what comes next, you can do more than bounce back. You can bounce forward. Offer ends 11/15/20. Restrictions apply. Requires qualifying Comcast Business service. New Amazon Business Prime Essential members only.
Well, the way they pick TV shows is they make one show. That show's called a pilot. Then they show that one show to the people who pick shows. And on the strength of that one show, they decide if they want to make more shows. Some get chosen and become television programs. Some don't. Become nothing.
Welcome to Drop the Pilot, a podcast dedicated to TV pilots that became nothing. I'm Jimmy.
And I am Tisto. Today we'll be discussing Lost in Space, which aired on September 8, 1973. Oh, I was just a wee bairn. I was 6 years old. As part of the ABC Saturday Superstar movie series produced by Hanna-Barbera. It stars the voices of Michael Bell, Sherry L. Baroni, Vincent Van Patten, Don Messick and Jonathan, the amazing and fantastic and wonderful and also horrible, Jonathan Harris.
Also horrible.
He's fantastic to imitate. And yeah. I'm sorry, I will apologize now. Because I'm sure I will be imitating him.
Yeah. See, I would also say all those things apart from horrible for Don Messick as well, because Don Messick was the man, the original voice of Scooby-Doo.
The original voice of Scooby-Doo, yes, among other things, yeah. Virtually all of these guys actually did all kinds of voices for Hanna-Barbera.
Yeah. It was written by Fred Freeberg, who wrote for the new Scooby-Doo movies, the Super Friends TV show, as well as live-action shows Starsky and Hutch and Rawhide. It was directed by Hanna-Barbera veteran Charles A. Nichols, who is a legend. He started directing Disney shorts in the 40s and 50s, but he also directed shows such as Heathcliff, the Rambo animated series, Plastic Man, and the Police Academy animated series. So he worked for all different companies. So, my dear friend Tisto, what did you think of the Hanna-Barbera Lost in Space pilot?
I absolutely loved it. I can't believe they robbed little six-year-old me of having this as an actual series to watch all the time. It was fantastic.
Okay, I can't tell if you're being...
I'm serious. I know I don't have a very sincere voice. I really did, though.
because I kind of loved this as well.
I know. It's really good.
Yeah, I would have watched the hell out of this as a child.
Absolutely.
Are you kidding me? This would have been amazing.
Yeah, yeah. It was very much like a bit of Johnny Quest in there. And, you know, it had the right elements of Lost in Space. I did not care for the robot voice, but, you know, that was a different choice by Don Messick. But oh well.
Yeah, and the robot was called Robon.
That's right, yes.
Which, I don't know if that's what he's called in the original show, or is it just Robot?
It is just called Robot in the original show.
Right.
And it is not, for semi-fans or real fans would already know this, it is not Robbie the Robot. Robbie the Robot is from a different film.
Yeah, he's from, Forbidden Planet?
Forbidden Planet, that is correct, sir.
Yay, me! I quite enjoyed this. I was in my element because I love Hanna-Barbera. As you know, I'm a lifelong Hanna-Barbera fan, and I just loved every second of this because it was something of Hanna-Barbera that I'd never seen before.
Yep.
It is made good by Jonathan Harris's portrayal as Dr. Smith. If it wasn't his voice, if it wasn't authentic voice, it would not have been the same. I don't think.
Hold your tongue, you jabbering jackanapes.
Exactly. Because he's really good in this.
I think all the actors did a fine job. I mean, some of them, Michael Bell and Sherry Alberoni, were hired to do the voices that they normally do, which is people, right? I mean,
yeah, exactly.
But they that worked perfectly well. In the end, Vince Van Patten as well for the kid. And they're all obviously they're straight men for the Jonathan Harris's character of Zachary Smith. Yeah. But and the robot as well. But I thought that the writing was good. I mean, there's a moral to the story and it's like a Star Trek episode in certain ways. Yeah, I thought it was great.
Yeah. No, I just don't. Hanna-Barbera gets a lot of shit and I don't understand why. I mean, a lot of their shows are cheap, but there is some really good animation in this. There's some really good sort of, they actually put some effort into this, I think.
Yeah, it's used judiciously in the typical Hanna-Barbera style, but it's not, it's not as bad as the early Japanese anime stuff was.
If you think about a lot of their character designs, a lot of their character designs are really bloody good. They're very distinctive. I mean, Fred Flintstone's just a Neanderthal man, but you know what Fred Flintstone looks like. You know that's him when you see him. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, a good, I forget who said it. I think it was Matt Groening who said a good cartoon character is recognizable in silhouette.
Exactly. Yeah. And you have that with like Fred Flintstone.
Yeah.
Scooby-Doo. And even Shaggy, if you get to see his wee tussles and his chin.
They like Shaggy and Fred so much, they just kept using those character designs in different cartoons.
They did. Yeah. No, I fully understand that Hanna-Barbera just reused a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm not just talking about their backgrounds in every cartoon. But I do understand that. But wait a minute, my laptop decided to say it's needing an update, so I'm just saying remind me later, so don't fucking switch off, you bastard. Right. But I love Hanna-Barbera, I don't care.
I think you mean do something, you bumbling bucket of bolts.
Yeah, I do actually. But I do mean that, but I'm not gonna say it.
Okay.
I don't know the original show, but I do know that the characters are different.
Yeah, that was a little bit odd. I'm not sure why they did that. But it was the Robinson family, which obviously the original show was based on the Swiss family Robinson.
Yeah.
The idea that they got lost on a primitive island and they had to, create it. Well, this was the family of Robinsons who were lost in space. And they didn't build a treehouse, but they, tried to get along and that sort of thing. And this kind of throws that away and just says, it's Craig Robinson and his brother and a lady.
She's just a lady.
There's like this weird explanation of like, she's a temporary geologist replacing the normal geologist. Like, what?
Well, that's weird. Yeah, I'm just going to get into the thing, the synopsis, but it's got very grown-up dialogue in it. Because, how many kids know what on rotation or sabbatical means?
Right, yes, that's
or,
right.
Or practitioners, or even what a botanist is. It's just so many words in it. I'm like, I barely know what that means, and it's in a kid's show. So let's go through the plot. Okay. Craig Robinson, fresh out of Space Academy, because of course he is, has taken command of the Jupiter 2. That's the name of the ship in the show, though, isn't it?
That is correct, yes.
Yeah. Robinson takes his younger brother, Link. That's not a name.
Short for Lincoln, yeah.
Oh, is it short for Lincoln, right?
Yes.
Along on a routine mission from Earth to Saturn to drop off geologist Dina Carmichael. En route, the ship is battered by a meteor shower. Damaged, the Jupiter 2 is forced to land on an uncharted planet. Straight away, I'm going to have to give props to Hoyt Curtin. Hoyt Curtin is very underrated and doesn't get enough love when it comes to TV and animation in general, but he is the man who done basically every single Hanna-Barbera cartoon. he composed the music.
Oh, really? The music was good in this.
Yeah, exactly. The music in this, I mean, his action music is usually really bloody good. But a lot of the times he does fall into the down, 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 down kind of thing, which is
a bit, there's a lot of trilling.
Yeah. But when, like, the meteors are hitting the ship and his action music kicks in, that's really good. Yeah. He does do some... And also, he wrote most of the theme tunes to Hanna-Barbera shows. Yeah. So he's, you know, he's a talented man. Everybody knows the theme tune Scooby-Doo and the Flintstones. Almost immediately upon landing, the crew is greeted by three frogs. Frogs. The crew is greeted by three frogs, who urge them to run into the forest. The Earth crew does not understand the urgency until a group of Tyrannos? I watched this, honestly.
Yeah, Tyrannos, they keep saying it, yeah.
Fly in, firing weapons on flying platforms. Under attack, the Robinson party welcomes assistance from a frog named Lar. Lar explains that the Tyrannos have always been violent since they arrived on the planet and that his people have been unable to communicate with them.
Wait, the Lar is the name of the frog?
Yeah.
I thought Brack was the name of the frog.
Is that Brack? Brack's the name of the child that is playing.
Oh, that's right. Okay, yes. Sorry.
Playing the game with Smith.
Okay.
Lars, the first one that they made
the main contact with.
Yeah, he's voiced by Sidney Miller, who is also a prominent voice artist.
Mm-hmm.
He was a dungeon master in Dungeons & Dragons.
Oh, really?
And I love that show so much. So
we should also mention Ralph James as the other voice, because he's the only other voice that we haven't mentioned so far. He's voice of Tyrannos and whatnot.
Yeah. The frogs are not technologically advanced, so if the Jupiter 2 has any hope of leaving the planet, they need help from the Tyrannos. Craig Robinson plans to help make peace between the two species so that he can get his crew safely off-world. I like that. It's like thinking about his crew. So let's make peace so we can, you know, get parts for the ship and get the F out of here.
It's a very traditional kind of Star Trek-y sort of plot development, yeah.
Yeah.
Conflict.
It is, yeah. Meanwhile, Dr. Smith, Robon, and Link Robinson have discovered a frock youngster named Brack, who plays a marbles-like game with diamonds. Smith is entranced and tries to trade for several diamonds. Brack refuses but agrees to play for them. Smith, however, is unable to defeat the child. The diamonds they learn are a product of the Tyranno technology. They are created somehow by the power source that keeps the Tyrannos alive. I like how it's written here. They are created somehow by the power source that keeps the Tyrannos alive. It's like, yeah, they're not explaining it.
Yeah,
it's
that fine. Is not it's very just, yeah, explained. Yeah. Yeah. The whole power source there, yeah, it's a giant battery. I was like, really?
Yeah. Dr. Smith and Link travel to Tyranno territory in search of diamonds. They have given Dr. Smith a really strange walk.
The way Craig Robinson has a weird run as well, yeah.
Yeah, but the way Dr. Smith walks is like he's got his shoulders up, his chest is puffed out. It's really strange looking. And I don't know if that's how Jonathan Harris walked in real life, or if that's how Dr. Smith walked in the TV show, but it looks really strange. It looks like he could like rest a cup on his chest and drink while he's walking.
I think that Craig Robinson's run is recycled from Scooby-Doo. It's that same bent over thing that Fred would do, yeah.
Yeah, probably is Fred, because they are sort of shaped the same sort of way, like barrel-chested and, yeah. Robon warns Craig and Dinah of the danger, and the trio mount a rescue operation with the help of Lar. Dinah deduces that the Tyrannos must always travel in pairs because they are energy-based. One is positively charged and the other is negatively charged. With this information, the crew is able to formulate methods of stunning the aliens.
There's a very clever bit too, where they like build a moving speaker system to try to talk to the Toronto's, and that doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, that was okay. That was neat.
Yeah, it was. This pilot is good. There you go. They make their way to the Toronto city and free Dr. Smith and Link, who have been captured.
Blast their way in.
Yeah.
It's very funny to me. It's like, okay, we figured out their weakness. Now let's the two of us destroy this whole city.
Yeah. But I also like the fact that Dr. Smith is like so pig-headed that even though once he learns that he can't get out of the cell because there's a force field, he still just keeps trying to walk out the door, even though he knows there's an invisible force field there.
He just tries a second time, yeah.
While there, they discover and shut down the Toronto energy source, but repair it as a show of good faith to convince the Toronto's that they and the frogs are not enemies. Or not their enemies, sorry.
When they shut down their energy source, it shuts down all the Toronto's. So they could have just literally just destroyed all the Toronto's, but they brought them back to life by repairing the energy source. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You couldn't really show that in a Saturday morning cartoon, to be fair. Let's just destroy an entire race. although maybe in the 70s. Craig Robinson is able to negotiate for a peace between the frogs and the Toronto's. The Toronto's assist in repairing the Jupiter 2's power pod so that the Jupiter 2 can blast off. All's well that ends well, except for Dr. Smith, who mourns the loss of a fortune in diamonds.
If we ever get out of this, I'll never mention diamonds again.
Yeah, although they're still lost in space.
He was from the Bronx, by the way, Jonathan Harris.
Was he?
born in New York City.
Right, so I can't really find much about this, like why they changed characters and stuff. I can only imagine it's probably because of rights. Maybe they just didn't want to ask the other actors for rights for their how they look for the character design and stuff, or...
I think they wanted probably to slim down the number of characters.
Well, they could have done that. They still could have made it a married couple and a child. One child.
Well, I think limits our possibilities for future developments. I mean, as soon as Craig Robinson and Dina Carmichael get into space, they're going to find some alone time. Guaranteed.
But wouldn't that be better in 1973 if it was a married couple?
Well, I don't know.
Keep your whole home running like clockwork, from the office to the game room with Xfinity Internet. You'll get the best in-home Wi-Fi experience with reliable speed and coverage. Now that's simple, easy, awesome. Go online or call 1-800-XFINITY today to learn more. Restrictions apply.
Depends on it, I suppose. I don't know. You know, I don't want to think about that.
Yeah, this would have been, like, as we said, the aired as part of the ABC Saturday Superstar movie series. And that had quite a few, it says movies, but they were like 43 minutes long. But that had a few sort of pilots in it.
Okay, yeah, sure.
The majority of them were pilots. So we could probably do pretty much all of them. But they also had the Brady Kids on Mysterious Island.
Gosh.
That's where Yogi's Arc Lark started. That became Yogi's Gang. There was one called Mad, Mad, Mad Monsters. Nanny and the Professor.
That was a cartoon. I didn't really say it got turned into a cartoon. What a thing to turn into a cartoon.
Yeah, there was one called Popeye Meets the Man Who Hated Laughter.
What? Really?
Yeah. Willie Mays and the Say Hey Kid.
Huh.
Yep.
From? Was that a movie?
Willie Mays. Well, Willie Mays is a baseball player, isn't he? So he was just getting his own cartoon show.
Okay. That was his actual nickname, the Say Hey Kid.
Is it?
Yeah.
Right. Well, it says the animated feature stars the famous San Francisco Giants baseball player Willie Mays, who voices his own character, a guardian angel named Casey, named after legendary Brooklyn Dodgers, Boston Braves, New York Yankees, and New York Mets baseball player Casey Stengel, voiced by Paul Frees, who is also a great voice actor, agrees to help Willie win the National League pennant if he agrees to be the godfather of an orphan girl named Veronica.
That makes sense.
Lassie and the Spirit of Thunder Mountain. Gidget makes her own connection. Gidget getting animated. Tabitha and Adam and the Clown Family, which is the children from Bewitched.
The Bewitched, oh, sure.
Yeah. I've seen this one. Daffy Duck and Porky Pig meet the Groovy Ghoulies.
Really? Remember the Groovy Ghoulies, but I don't remember that episode.
Yeah. But not all of these are Hanna-Barbera.
Some
of them are Filmation and Rankin Bass.
Right.
Because Filmation did the Daffy Duck and Porky Pig one because they owned Groovy Ghoulies. But for some reason, they got the rights to use Daffy Duck and Porky Pig. So they did this special, and it is atrocious. And I used to love the Groovy Ghoulies, but the animation on the Looney Tunes characters is atrocious. And then we've got Lost in Space and another Nanny and the Professor one. So
another. They were just sure that Nanny would work.
Professor, yeah. The Mini Monsters, which is an animated feature based on the monsters involving a car that is fueled by music.
Well, yeah, a lot of those, especially Hanna-Barbera stuff, yeah, were basically music videos, right? It started with the Archies.
Well, Hanna-Barbera didn't make the Archies. The only Hanna-Barbera ones in this are Yogi's Art Clark, Oliver and Artful Dodger, which is a two-parter, The Adventures of Robin Hoodnick, The Gidget One, Bran and Splits in Hocus Pocus Park, Tabitha and Adam, and that's it. All the others were made by different companies.
I'm hung up on the Archies. Who did the Archies if it wasn't Hanna-Barbera?
I don't know. But it definitely wasn't Hanna-Barbera.
But that was the same thing as Josie and the Pussycats. Wasn't that all part of the same Hanna-Barbera deal?
Filmation. Filmation made Archie.
But Josie and the Pussycats are directly related to the Archies.
Yes, but Josie and the Pussycats also went to outer space, so Archie wasn't in it. So, they just made a deal. They made a deal to make Josie and the Pussycats, and Filmation had a deal to make the Archie show. So you don't find, I don't think Jodie and the Pussycats are in the Archie show, are they? I think it's just Sabrina.
That's right. Sabrina was another one that was part of that world, that part of that universe. Sabrina the Teenage Witch came out of that as well. But that became the impetus and the beginning of the Hanna-Barbera, you know, cartoons that all Scooby-Doo and Josie and the Pussycats and Speed Buggy and the Captain Caveman and all of those that were basically the same thing, you know.
Yeah.
Mystery solving teens with a lot of music in it.
Yeah, but the Archie
talking
show,
animal.
Well, the Archie show isn't that. The Archie show is more like a live action, like the Monkees type
right,
thing.
But,
it's just like
yes, but they were banned.
Yeah,
I guess I was sorry. I was confused. Filmation, okay.
That's okay.
I gotta give a shout out to Filmation then.
Yeah,
I didn't watch that show. I don't remember it very well. So
no, I remember Josie and the Pussycats more.
Yeah, me too.
Josie and the Pussycats in outer space for some reason.
Keep your whole home running like clockwork, from the office to the game room with Xfinity Internet. You'll get the best in-home Wi-Fi experience with reliable speed and coverage. Now that's simple, easy, awesome. Go online or call 1-800-XFINITY today to learn more. Restrictions apply.
Everybody went to outer space. They used to. They made a Mork and Mindy cartoon series.
Okay.
And Laverne and Shirley and Happy Days had a cartoon series. But it wasn't really like the Happy Days TV series was Fonz and the Happy Days Gang. And it was, an alien from outer space comes down in a spaceship, and the spaceship's also a time machine, and Fonz and Richie and Ralph Mouth and the other one all go. And in fact, no, it's just those
Potsy.
Three. No, Potsy's not there. Those three, minus Potsy, all go back in time and have adventures back in time. That's right, what Fonz and the Happy Days Gang is.
Sold in the room.
Yeah, I used to love it. The only thing I used to hate about it was the fact I had to have a character, a dog character that could stand up and talk.
Yep.
So I had Mr. Cool, which was Fonzie's dog.
It was basically Poochie.
Yeah, and he was voiced by Frank Welker, because of course he was.
Of course he was.
but Fonz and the Happy Days Gang, and this has gone off memory because I don't have it up here because I know this show. Fonz and the Happy Days Gang was actually, all the actors did their own voices. Mm-hmm. Like, it's actually Henry Winkler and fucking Ron Howard doing his own voice in this cartoon series.
Like, Donnie Most didn't have anything to do, but yeah, it seems like Richie Cunningham would have been busy with some other stuff.
D.D. Con does the voice of Cupcake, who's the alien, and Didi Kon was in Greece. So,
Sure. Yeah.
What was a nanny and a professor anyway?
Juliet Mills played a British nanny for an American widower and his, I don't know, four small children, something like that. It's basically the nanny, you know, that was the later TV show with the, what's her
all
name?
All right, okay.
It's basically the same thing, you know. I don't think they fell in love. I don't know. It didn't last all that long.
Right. But Hanna-Barbera thought they could make two of them.
They may have made two episodes or something. Yeah. And then they went, well, we got to show both of them, so let's call them movies. But yeah, it's bizarre. It's even, well, I mean, I guess it's not as bizarre. I mean, the Mork and Mindy stuff, that lends itself to a cartoon. I can't imagine what they were thinking about when they made a Laverne and Shirley cartoon. That's as traditional as a sitcom can be. I can't imagine what you'd do with that.
Well, the Laverne and Shirley cartoon, to give its full title, is Laverne and Shirley in the Army.
That's horrible!
Because... because back in 1980, Private Benjamin was a big deal. So in 1980-1981, Hanna-Barbera decided to make Laverne and Shirley in the Army, as well as Olive Oil in the Army for the Popeye Cartoon Hour, or whatever it was called.
Holy cow.
They just kept putting these women in the Army because of Private Benjamin was a big deal. Wow. Same. I've never actually seen the Laverne and Shirley one, but I think it's basically just the same idea.
Those two actresses in particular, I think, would be absolutely lifeless as cartoon characters. I can't imagine them as cartoon characters.
Well,
their voices, I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Well, Penny Marshall, I think she's got a more distinctive voice than the other one whose name I can't remember.
Cindy...
Hey, Williams?
Williams, yes.
But she doesn't have a very distinctive voice. But yeah, it was all part of the same sort of animated block. It was the Fonz, and then it was Laverne and Shirley, and then Mork and Mindy. And Mork and Mindy is fucking Mindy in her high school days, and for some reason Mork is there. And
what?
Yeah, they're teenagers. And Mork has like a little alien sort of sidekick that didn't have one in Lost in Space, but for some reason Mork gets one.
Wow.
Crazy stuff. Hey, Chuck Norris had his own cartoon series. Come on.
They did some very misguided stuff that was much more misguided than just the sitcoms, yeah, true. Mm. Oh my god, the Mork and Mindy stuff. Oh, that dog. Holy mackerel.
Mm-hmm. And the Mork and Mindy segment in which Robin Williams and Pandora voiced the title characters. Oh, could you imagine that? I need to try and find this show because, like, early 80s, late 70s, early 80s, coked up Robin Williams voicing a cartoon character. Yeah. I need to find this.
God bless Pam Dauber for putting up with Robin Williams for years. Yeah.
I know. A teenage Mork is sent to Earth from planet Oort to observe the lives of human teenagers and enroll in a local school. As on the original show, Mindy McConnell and her father, Fred, voiced by Conrad Janis, are the only Earthlings who know that he is an alien, and he sends telepathic reports of his experiences to Orkin ruler Orson, voiced by an uncredited Ralph James. Unlike the original show, Mork is accompanied by his Orkin pet, a pink six-legged dog creature named Doing. guess who voices Doing? Just have a guess.
I'm going to say Frank Welker.
It is absolutely Frank Welker.
Thank you.
Other characters in the show included Eugene, Hamilton, and Principal Carruthers. That sounds absolutely fucking terrible, but I probably would have loved it if it ever aired over here, but I don't think it did.
I don't remember any of these.
Yeah, so that's a bit of a rabbit hole we fell down there, Tisto. But yeah, this is just like one of those cartoons that Hanna-Barbera was like, right, that works okay in live action, but what if we made it into a cartoon series and then we could maybe expand what you can do with it? You can do different things in a cartoon budget, which I love. I do like that idea.
I tell you what, I'm kind of shocked that they did not have like a second robot that was like a cute sidekick robot dog or something like that. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah. No, that is true.
They don't do much with the robot here. He's mainly a foil, a direct foil for Smith. Yeah. In the same way that he was in the regular TV series.
Yeah, they don't have a cute character. Like in the Lost in Space movie from, what was it, the 90s?
Oh,
that had an animated, a CGI character called Blarp or something. It was just this ugly big-eyed alien thing, and that was supposed to be, you know, the funny, cute, comic relief type sort of deal. But yeah, this show didn't even do that, so that's good. This animated pilot is better than the 1997 movie starring Joey from Friends. I'm saying this right now.
Agreed.
Yes. before we go, I forgot to mention, I find it really strange that not all, but like I think two of the human characters in this actually have eye color.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Because I think the kids' eyes are green, but Deanna's are purple, which is very strange.
The eyes look a little weird from time to time as well, I noticed.
Yeah, so that's just a bit weird that they don't usually do that in Hanna-Barbera cartoons, give the characters eye colors.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder what the reasoning was behind that. But, you know, I don't know. Do you have anything else to add? Because I've been talking a lot.
Only that it was arrogant and stupid of us to think ill of everyone but our own kind.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. But hey, we're humans, so that's what we do. That's all we have time for. I'd like to thank Tisto for joining me once again.
You don't want me. I'm just trouble wherever I go.
Tell me about it.
Bad luck. Jinx.
But still, I ask you to come on the show, even though I know you're trouble. If you like to follow the podcast, I have a website, shiftybench.co.uk. If you want to contact us, it's contact@shiftybench.co.uk. You can follow me on Twitter @DropThePilotPod. Where can the people find you on the internet, Tisto?
Tisto Zarban on Twitter. I'm at tisto.com, TYSTO.com.
Excellent. Like, thank you all for listening, and we'll speak to you all next time. Goodbye. I was kind of expecting you to do the Dr. Smith voice again there to go.
You report to the commander, you lily-livered lummox.
Yeah, you could have just said bye.
drowning in IRS debt? If you can't afford to pay your IRS debt due to economic hardship, you can now be free of IRS collection efforts by taking advantage of a special IRS tax hardship program. This program allows Americans who owe the IRS to resolve their delinquent tax debt once and for all. In some cases, maybe even reducing what you owe significantly. An open phone line has been established by Community Tax for consumers to call and see if they qualify. Simply dial 800-600-3010. If you owe back taxes to the IRS and cannot afford to pay them back or have years of unfiled tax returns, help is standing by. Just call the Community Tax Helpline today at 800-600-3010 for the help that you need. Don't take on the IRS alone. They can attack your wages, savings, pension, home, and even your Social Security check. Call 800-600-3010 to see if you qualify. That's 800-600-3010.
In business, things move quickly. You have to be ready to shift, pivot, adapt, then do it all over again. Comcast Business gives you fast, reliable internet on the nation's largest gig speed network. And now, ask how to get fast shipping with Amazon Business Prime Essentials. Wow, that was fast. So no matter what comes next, you can do more than bounce back. You can bounce forward. Offer ends 11/15/20. Restrictions apply. Requires qualifying Comcast Business Service. New Amazon Business Prime Essential members only.